In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Time to talk movies. Alan Adams from The Main Edge is here with us in studio. Good afternoon, sir.
And a good afternoon to you, too, sir.
How does a Monday find you?
It's not bad. Not bad.
Yeah. Get some snow coming tonight.
Yeah, a little bit. And then, I tell you what, that little weekend that you described, that was the first time hearing of that. Yeah, so I'm just like,
I saw that this afternoon when I looked at the forecast. I had no idea. So glad we sent our snowblower out to be repaired. That was good timing.
I'm sure it'll be back in time.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Things can change. That's a long way from now. But yeah. We're focused on the good times ahead. Did you do some fun things over the weekend? Modern fun.
I mean, I guess, yeah, for a given value of fun. We were pretty much homebodies this weekend.
It's cold.
We had a little bit of a funk in the house. No, not the big one, but like, you know, just a little bit of illness. Not like sick, but just that sort of rundown kind of like.
Sure.
We're all clean. So don't.
Oh yeah. Well yeah. Some shows in town not so clean. We're doing just fine here. How's Stella doing?
Oh, she's good. Yeah, actually, it's funny that you mentioned with the weekend weather. Her quarterly oncology appointment is on Friday.
Right.
So we'll be going. Right. We'll be going down there to Scarborough to check in on her.
All right.
We've been keeping an eye on stuff. So far, everything appears to be okay. But, good. You know, it's nice to get that confirmed by people who actually know what they're talking about.
Fingers all crossed here. And everybody pulling for Stella to keep on riding that wave.
Well, sure.
Because, you know, it's not enough that she owns you in football picks. how did she do on the weekend, by the way?
Well, we've discussed this before, but Stella is Stella stops caring after the regular season is over. Like she's just like she's like, well, I've beaten you in what matters. If you want to embrace your little small sample size trophy, you go ahead and do that. But I am she's like we both know how owned you are.
Yeah.
And the reality is that yes, I have in fact been pretty thoroughly owned.
How did you do on the weekend?
Pretty good, actually. Not as good as last weekend. Like the only game I missed last weekend was the Patriots game. I went with my Homer heart, but I got everything else. I did okay. The big one for me was I had the Bengals, which was which felt good. But man, wasn't that a hell of a game last night?
Oh my God, that was so much fun. I didn't want it to end.
Well, and that's the thing. Because it was a fine game for like three quarters and like 12 minutes. And then all of a sudden it's like both those guys, Allen and Mahomes, are just like, oh, by the way, we're literally the best in the world at this.
Yeah.
So, buckle up, Buttercup, because it's going to get real.
It was like the ghost of John Madden said, I'm going to turn this into one of my games.
It was so good.
That was
so
fantastic.
Good.
All right, I'm giddy. I'm giddy because you saw three movies, and I know that a couple of them were not great, and nothing makes my black little heart skip a beat like knowing you're going to hammer the hell out of some bad movies. So where do we begin?
Well, let's start with the one that wasn't so terrible.
Okay.
We'll get that out of the way.
All right.
We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, but it's a Netflix movie. It's called Munich, The Edge of War.
Comedy?
No. Yeah. Real knee slapper. It's basically built around the lead up to the Munich Agreement, in which Adolf Hitler said, just give me Czechoslovakia and I'm done. And it's all good.
Thanks, Neville Chamberlain.
Well, and we spend a lot of time with Mr. Chamberlain in this film, played by Jeremy Irons.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, he's never going to be able to play Churchill. So, I mean, I guess this is the best he's going to be able to do. It's basically like that's the sort of real life setting, but it's a fictionalized account of two diplomats, one from the British side, one from the German side, who were classmates at Oxford, and so they know each other. And then years later, they're both sort of serving at the pleasure of their respective countries' leaders. And the young man on the German side, young name named Paul von Hartmann, is he gets his hands on a memo, the minutes of a meeting of the Chancellery, where Hitler is basically just like, actually, this is what I'm gonna do, and so he, fiercely proud of his country, views Hitler as the threat that he is, and so it's like, I need to get this in the hands of someone who can do something about it. And so back channel, you know, communication, espionage, etc., to get his to get this this document into the hands of his you know, his former classmate, who has the ear of Neville Chamberlain. And that's, I mean, that's kind of it. Like, the first half of the movie is a pretty decent spy thriller, and then it kind of falls into, well, it sort of devolves into the kind of preachy history lesson that, you know, it's just not that interesting, especially right. when you're dealing with something where, if you have a brain in your head, you know how it ends. Yeah. Like, you're aware of how this is going to play out. And so, there's not enough really there to sort of, maintain that level of interest, when you kind of know what the end game is.
Sure.
So yeah, Munich, The Edge of War, it was perfectly fine. Like, Sheridan and I both enjoyed it. The performances are pretty good. Jeremy Irons, you know, getting to play ahead of state. Like, I know dudes really dig doing that. So yeah, it was, like I said, it was perfect. It was perfectly acceptable. And perfectly acceptable was by far the highlight of my movie watching weekend.
Okay. Two choices. Do we go with The Royal Treatment or The King's Daughter?
Let's do The Royal Treatment, because that was also on Netflix. You know how you you see a movie and you're like, oh, I've literally seen this movie before?
Sure.
That's what The Royal Treatment is.
Oh, my.
The basic gist is, it's a young lady who runs a hair salon in Queens, through a series of totally believable and not at all unreasonable hijinks, winds up cutting the hair of the prince of some weird small European country. It's called Lavania, in case you're wondering. There's always a Nia in there somewhere.
Well, sure, yes. Sounds exotic.
And you know, she cuts his hair, and you know, obviously there's a spark. And so when you know, the prince, who's getting married to someone else, loses the hair and makeup team for his wedding, he's like, hey, I know this person. And so this young hairdresser and her equally stereotypical buddies get put on a plane and taken to the country of Lavinia, which, Rich, I don't know where Lavinia is supposed to be on the map, but it sure looks like the Hamptons. Right down to,
it's like another country.
The ostensible castle, it seriously looks like some hedge fund manager's second house, like his weekend getaway in, like, sure, West Egg or whatever. So and yeah, that's it. And again, like I said, you've seen this movie a million times, mm-hmm, before. The one that immediately leaps to mind is that terrible atrocity that Fran Drescher was in.
Oh, yes.
It was her and, like, I think Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Woof. So, but this one has a young lady who's quite popular among the younger set. Her name's Laura Morano. Plays Izzy, our hair salon owner. the prince, Prince Thomas, is played by Mina Massoud, who was who's best known, he played Aladdin in the live action Aladdin did a couple of years ago.
That went so well.
Well, and I gotta say, and it's awful, and I feel bad, but you know, we're sitting there watching it, and you know how sometimes, like, you hear accents that are so clearly being put on that it's like nails, like, on a chalkboard, like, just scraping, like, just across your soul. You're just like, oh, this is so. And so there may have been a number of occasions while I'm watching the two of these people. By the way, the hairdresser and the prince, he breaks up with his marriage because he doesn't love her. The hair salon girl winds up falling in love with the prince. They fall in love with one another, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I spoiled it. Don't watch it, please. but yeah, so I'm sitting on the couch, and about every I don't know, 10 minutes or so without, like, and I don't mean to do this, but I'm just reminded of, you know, the beautiful moment in Aladdin with, you know, Aladdin and Jasmine seeing the world. And I just bust out with a whole new world. Because that's the kind of accent work we're talking about from this young lady who I'm sure is perfectly lovely, but man, wasn't it just a train wreck? And again, I recognize, like, Netflix doesn't care how good these movies are.
Right.
Like, they're doing their thing, and they've got their handful where they direct their resources.
Right. It'll be forgotten in a month.
To get their, they have their awards ones, and then they have the ones that they churn out because someone said, well, we got to have at least one new one a week. Well, when your business model is built on quantity rather than quality, well, that's when you get things like the royal treatment.
All right. And finally, I can't wait to hear about The King's Daughter.
Do you know anything about this movie, Rich?
Not a thing. I had not heard of it until I saw you tweet about it today.
This was the one wide release box office movie of this weekend. In upwards of 1,000 theaters.
Wow.
It made less than $1 million.
Oof. That's not good.
That is not good.
after some record-breaking weekends, so it's not like people aren't going.
Right. This movie, I alluded to it when I tweeted about this. You know, we've talked about the term dumpuary. that paradigm shifted a little bit last year just because everything had been pushed, right, and whatever. But let me tell you, man, dumpuary's back, baby, because this thing is just a mess.
Oh, I can't wait.
This movie finished filming in 2014.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite an editing process.
And it has just been sitting in the can.
Oof.
For upwards of a decade, and they're just like, and it's one of those things where it's like you could just tell that someone somewhere just threw their hands up and said, well, it's done. I mean, we might as well get the freaking thing out there.
So did it go past its expiration date?
Oh my God. Okay. So it's set in 17th century France.
Why not?
It's the story of Louis XIV. His court doctor convincing him that he could live forever if only he can get his hands on the heart of a mermaid. Plus, there's an illegitimate daughter that's been living in a convent since birth, but she's also a talented musician, and so he brings her to court to become his new royal composer. there's some stuff that happens. Look. Pierce Brosnan plays Louis XIV.
Oh, no. Oh, poor Pierce.
In a brunette Fabio wig.
Okay.
Never wears a shirt that buttons more than halfway up. Does some horse riding, etc. That sort of stuff. You would think in 17th century France, at least someone might have a French accent.
Oui.
No. It's just like everybody's British. Everybody's British.
Even better.
For reasons that I simply do not understand. So Pierce Brosnan sends an expedition out into the ocean to capture a mermaid, which they do because, you know, why not?
Right.
With his, sea captain / pirate / prisoner, but not really, but it's unclear what he did to become a prisoner captain guy. I forget his name. It doesn't matter. None of it matters, Rich. None of it matters. I forgot to mention, poor Pierce Brosnan, his dear friend and trusted advisor, his religious sort of, leader, played by poor William Hurt.
Oh, man.
You know, it just breaks your heart to see. And it's like, man, what were your money troubles like? 8 years ago.
Right. And probably had thought to himself, well, at least that didn't come out.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's rare, but it happens where you watch a movie and you see everybody on screen having at various times the realization what a piece of crap this movie's going to be. And it, you know, and you know, for the most part, it's usually the more self-aware actors.
Yes,
literally everyone in this movie knows what an absolute disaster it's going to be, and they just keep pushing through and pushing through. You know, so there's a mermaid, and then it turns out that the illegitimate daughter, who's a musician, can talk to the mermaid for reasons. And so there's a there's some dynamic there, and then the daughter is like, "Oh, Dad, don't kill the mermaid so you can live forever." And the king is like, "But I want to. I want to live forever." And then you have the evil doctor who's like, "I'm going to cut this mermaid open." And then you have the sea captain being like, "Well, I've fallen in love with this girl, so I guess I have to save the mermaid." And then, you know, scene. Like, it's just, it was just awful. Like, man, you know... Do you know how hard you have to work to make a 90-minute movie feel interminable? But that's where we're at. Like, just so much. You know, there were a couple of, like, drone shots of, like, you know, beautiful castles or whatever. And then some close-ups of, like, you know, Pierce Brosnan pretending to ride a horse. And then a bunch of, like, weird CGI stuff that feels very dated. Like, even more dated than 2014.
Ooh.
Specifically, the mermaid. Who looks like, you know, she was rendered from like some sort of adventure video game from sometime in the mid aughts. Look, I don't know if I'm making this clear enough. I did not have a good time at this movie.
I'm shocked at that.
You know, like, look, I do my job. I'm very cautious about what I do and when I choose to do it. Rich, like, I walked out of that place, like, actively angry that I risked the coronavirus to see this piece of garbage.
See that.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, like, I don't know. The one thing.
But,
you know,
were there other people in the theater?
That's the shocking part. Yes.
Oh my
God. I mean,
God.
Not many, you know, and like, I always sit in the back and wear a mask. But look, all I'm saying is, I have, you know, I try to live a life without regret. I don't know what in the recent past I could say I regret more than the 90 minutes I gave away to this movie. I can't stress enough, please don't go see this movie. And I know that, you know, I know that it's hard work to make a movie, and I know that it's not, you know, necessarily fair for me to you know, to take all these shots at this movie, but when you spend $40 million and this is what you get, my scorn should be the least of your concerns. So yes, support your local movie theater, go to the movies, buy some snacks, go see Spider-Man again. Just for the love of God, I beg you, do not see The King's Daughter.
I'm in heaven. Now I want to see it, actually. But you know, I don't want
to
pay.
Oh yeah, wait for it to come to you, and then you can sit down, and then you'll be about 5 minutes in, and you'll be like, "Oh, Alan was right. He was right. He was right about all
He's
of it."
Searching the rest of your life to find a way to get those 90 minutes back. Oh,
yeah, no, it's in there. But you know, at least I got to see you know, Pierce Brosnan with his flowing locks. And William Hurt regretting every decision he's ever made.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge, talking movies on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.